Hello, Apostolic Insiders. Welcome to the Staples household. It is the sixth Sunday of Easter, Rose.
Yeah.
I can't believe Easter. We're coming up to the end of Easter, and I want to focus this week on a powerful section of the reading, the first reading from Acts chapter 10. The famous vision that Peter has to bring the gospel to the Gentiles, to Cornelius, and Peter's speech. I want to focus here on verse 34 for a moment. Then Peter proceeded to speak and said, "In truth, I see that God shows no partiality. Rather, in every nation, whoever fears him and acts uprightly is acceptable to him." Those are powerful words. We can pass over them and not get the full import of what's going on here. Now, we've seen this reading in recent weeks where St. Peter and indeed all of the apostles, you know, it's an odd thing for us in the 21st century when we look back and we see how there was such a prejudice against the Gentiles by the Jews. And it continued even after the resurrection in the early years of our Catholic Christian faith. Here, the apostles have the fullness of the revelation given to them at Pentecost. You know, I mean, the 12 apostles had a knowledge of God that we only attempt to get back to. You know, that's the story of the church, really, is they got the fullness of the revelation, proclaimed it in the first century. And we spend thousands of years penetrating into and trying to get back to that. I mean, that's how, you know, gloriously illuminated the apostles were. And yet, they had a blind spot, you know. And that blind spot is this deep prejudice that goes way back. The prejudice between Jew and Gentile, of course, it goes back to, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael and all of that. But we don't want to get into the details about history, just that the reality was so profound that throughout the Old Covenant, you see how that God's intention was never for Israel to just, you know, be turned in on themselves. I mean, they were called to be a light to the Gentiles. Interesting that that phrase, you know, a light to the nations or light to the Gentiles. Remember Simeon the prophet prophesies when he sees the child Jesus, this child is set to be that the light to the nations. Well, he's quoting Isaiah 42:6, which is a messianic psalm that says the Messiah would be, among many other things, a light to the Gentiles. But just seven chapters later, in Isaiah 49, verse 6, Israel was called to be a light to the nations as well. The nation itself was called to be a light. And perhaps you see it in its fullness during the reign of King Solomon, or the early years before he allowed his many wives to lead him astray. But, you know, the world, basically, many nations of the world came to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And there were conversions, like we believe, you know, the Ethiopians and others were converted because of the wisdom of Solomon. But even there, though, there was never this fullness of the understanding that we take for granted now in Christianity. That, of course, you know, what Jesus says in John 15, love one another as I have loved you, means love everyone, right? I mean, this is so foundational to our Catholic Christian faith. We forget that in the early centuries, they still didn't get it. You know, think about this, Rose. Jonah, right? The prophet. He is the classic example of how the people of God didn't get it. And even the prophet didn't get it. Right? What is that in VeggieTales, right? Jonah was a prophet.
Yeah, he didn't.
But he never really got it, right? And that's true. Because God calls him to preach to the Gentiles, and he says, no, I'd rather die than to preach, even though God commands him, right? Now, fast forward to the New Testament. Now we have the fullness of the revelation, the apostles, tongues of fire and such, and yet this prejudice and even hatred, the idea of hating, is deeply embedded in the hearts of the apostles, not just the Jews at large, but the apostles. You say, well, why do you say that, Tim? Well, first of all, remember in the gospel, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 43, Jesus famously says, you have heard it said, right? Love your neighbor, hate your enemy. And some people say, well, where does the Old Testament ever say hate your enemy? Well, it doesn't say it in those words, but Jesus is referring to Psalm 139, verses 21 and 22, where David says, have I not loathed your enemies, Lord? Listen to the words here. The word of the Lord, do I not, this is Psalm 139, 21, do I not hate them that hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe them that rise up against you? I hate them with perfect hatred. I love that line. I count them my enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. In other words, he's saying, you know my heart. I hate your enemies, Lord. You know, I'm doing good, right? That's how deeply embedded this is culturally. And remember, on the natural level, hatred is not a bad thing, right? We've talked about this, Val. Hatred is actually a natural passion. It's an aversion towards something that's harmful to you or harmful to those you love that brings about a natural hatred. Hatred is not naturally wrong or evil. But for us looking back, when we see that, it's like, what? Teach me to hate with a perfect hate. What's going on? It's because we've been so imbued with Catholic Christian culture. That's so far gone from us, even though in our culture today, I think we need, with the racism and everything. I mean, we're experiencing today, you know, I would argue not as bad as the hatred in Old Testament times and what we see in the Middle East even today. But we're approaching that with the racism. We've become so darkened as a culture, we've lost our Christian roots, that we're falling right back into paganism and you know, the same sorts of tribal hatred. It's a scary thing what's going on in our culture. But here's the point. When you look at the Gospels, the apostles originally went only to the Jews. They did not go to the Gentiles at all. And people say, what about St. Paul? Didn't he? He was the apostle to the Gentiles. No, Paul didn't go to the Gentiles. In fact, when he first converted, if you read his conversion in Acts chapter 9 in Damascus, there were Christians in Damascus. They had gone there because of the diaspora, the dispersion that happened after the stoning of St. Stephen in Acts chapter 7. There was a persecution that caused the Jewish Christians to be dispersed, and that's why there were some in Syria when Paul converted. But Paul goes exclusively to the synagogues. He does not go to the Gentiles. So all of the apostles, Peter himself, they go exclusively to the synagogues. They were not bringing the gospel to the Gentiles. How can that be when Matthew 28:19, Jesus said, go into all the world, preach the gospel, right, to all nations? But they ain't doing it. And even when they do go to other nations, they're only going to the synagogues. That's really important. And St. Peter included, until. This is why this is so revolutionary. You know what? I was actually looking at Paul's journeys as well. Even after, catch this, even after Peter opens up the church to the Gentiles, you see, like with St. Paul, he's still going to the synagogues. And of course, it would be not until Acts chapter, 16, verse 15, where Paul converts Lydia the purpler, the first European convert. But that's only in the context of the synagogue, and she was a God-fearer, a Gentile who worshipped the God of the Jews. And then, this is amazing, but you go to chapter 17, and when Paul famously speaks on Mars Hill to the Gentiles there, right? In Athens. The only reason why he went there, I mean, this is a long time after Peter opened the church up to the Gentiles. The only reason why he went there is the Jews in Thessalonica tried to kill him. They chased him out of Thessalonia there in Acts chapter, where is that? That's earlier, right? In Acts chapter 17, he's chased out of Thessalonica. He goes to Berea and has success there in the synagogue. But then the Jews from the Thessalonian Jews chase him to Berea and they try to kill him there. He has to run from, Berea from the Jews, and he ends up in Athens hiding for safety, and he's waiting for Silas and Timothy to come, and he happens upon these Gentiles on Mars Hill, and he has that famous encounter. In fact, it wouldn't be until Acts chapter 18, verse 6, that Paul finally says, all right, your blood is upon you. From here on out, I'm going to the Gentiles. Right? So, you know, it's phenomenal when you look back over this. And this is why this line here in Acts chapter 10 is so incredible. Because now, let's look at the story that leads up to the line that we just read. Right? Remember, Peter receives a vision. And of course, Cornelius had already received a vision. Cornelius, remember, Rose, we talked about him a few weeks ago. Cornelius was a Gentile, a Roman centurion, meaning he's in charge of 100 Roman soldiers. And he's faithful, though, and he believes in the God of the Jews. He's called a God-fearer. And he's praying. And he basically, an angel speaks to him and says, Cornelius, your prayer and your alms have ascended before God as a memorial, and your prayers have been heard. This is revolutionary, right? A Gentile is being heard by God, number one. And then Peter, of course, he tells him, the angel says, send men to Simon, who was staying in the house of a man named Simon the Tanner. You go to his house and tell him of what you have seen. Send men. So he sent three of his representatives to Simon. Meantime, to Peter. Meantime, Peter has a vision. And this is phenomenal. Val, you and I have talked about this, where Peter has this vision of a big sheet-like thing coming down and all manner of unclean animals, all manner of four-legged beasts and such. And Jesus says, Peter, kill and eat. Sorry to my vegetarian or what do we call it, vegan folks. No, yeah. Jesus wasn't. Kill and eat. And Peter responds. You know what this reminds me of? Jonah. Because Peter responds, not so, Lord. I have never eaten anything unclean. And he says, don't call unclean what I have cleansed. But he had to give him the vision three times in order for Peter to do it. And you know what I was looking at today, Val? Even then, he still didn't fully get it. Because it says, afterward, he was perplexed, meditating on what did this fully mean. And that's when the representatives of Cornelius come and relate what Cornelius had seen. Yes, Rose?
So would eating a juicy steak be known as eating unclean meat?
Yes, that's right. If it had blood, yeah. A good rare steak, right?
Yeah, or pork of any sort.
That's right. And pork of any sort whatsoever. But here's the key. Peter then gets the revelation of what is going on here. Those animals, not only is it okay now to eat a rare steak and eat pork?
Yeah.
But the Gentiles were to be received into the church. And this was revolutionary. But for us, we're going, what? Why is it? This is huge. This is thousands of years, about 2,000 years of prejudice of, are you kidding me? Lord, help me to hate these people. This David's prayer. And now, all of a sudden, we're called to love. Not just love, but this leads us to the gospel, right? Love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay his life down for his friends, and you are my friends, right? I don't call you slaves any longer. A slave doesn't know what his master's doing. I've called you friends because I've told you everything that I've heard from my Father. And look at verse 16 and 17. It was not you that chose me, I who chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit that will remain, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name he may give you. This I command you. Love one another. All right? He's calling us to love. And not just love, but to, just as God the Father, for God so loved the world, to love the nations. And this is not an option. Now, I wanted to point something else out here that I saw today, Val, from the reading. Think about this. In verse 9, as the Father loves me, so I also love you. Remain in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy might be in you and your joy might be complete. That is the lead up to love one another as I have loved you. This new commandment I give you. So notice that we could say that Peter's statement here in Acts chapter 10, verse 34 and 35 is so revolutionary. It literally transformed the entire world, because what Jesus is calling us to is to realize what had been eclipsed for thousands of years, and that's love. Love, in the fullest sense, cannot discriminate. But love, for 2,000 years, had discriminated. And it was written into the very text of the Old Testament. They could not see, in the Old Covenant, they could not fathom the idea of love your enemies. Love the Gentiles? Are you kidding me? We kill them, right? We stay away from them and we hate them. No. But you know what was eclipsed in the process? Love and joy. There was not, folks. I mean, don't get me wrong. In following God's commandments in the Old Testament and such, there was a kind of peace and a kind of joy, but not the kind of love, peace, and joy that Jesus Christ brings. And it only comes via one avenue, and that is by loving one another as Christ loved us, which means we love our enemies. It's not an option, but we love. So when you hear a Christian say, oh, I hate that person, it should break your heart. It really should, because you're missing what St. Peter did. And of course, it's Jesus through St. Peter, but when Jesus led St. Peter to open up the church to the Gentiles, this transformed the entire world and made possible everything that we've seen in 2,000 years of Christianity. The transformation of Europe and the entire world. None of it is impossible. Why, Val? Because think about it. If you are truncated in the way that you love, if your only love's, how are you going to evangelize the world? How could the Jews take the truth of the one guy to the world when you hate most of the world? You can't do it. It's only in this fullness of the revelation of the church being open, and not just the church, but the grace of God, the power of God, and the covenant of God being opened up. No longer is the covenant family consigned to a piece of carpet in the Middle East, but now it's to the entire world. If we could but live this that we believe, oh my goodness, and realize what it is that we're talking about when we say love one another, the opportunity as well as the obligation we have is mind-boggling, but at the same time, if we would but live it, this world would be transformed.